Let's all take our brown hymnals and turn to number 106. Number 106. Number 106. An old account settled. Number 106. As we all stand, please. There was a time on earth within the book of heaven. An old account was the need for sins and unforgiven. My name was on the top and many things below. I went to the keeper and said, but long ago, long ago, long ago, there's a gold account settled long ago, and the record clear today for the walking central way, and the old account was settled long ago. The old account was large and growing every day. Number four, dinner to the Lord, repent of all your sins, for him it comes again, and you will take the end, and then you'll touch the end, 100 years below, and he will touch the 20, it's settled long ago, long ago, long ago, as the old account was settled long ago. Washed my sins away when the old account was settled long ago. Number 327, sweet hour prayer. Sweet hour of prayer, sweet hour of prayer, that calls me from a world of care, and bids me end the Father's throne, echo my bones and wishes shall wild path see through.
In the valley, and troubles seem to come my way. I've got a friend who walks with me night and day. Met him one night while I was down on my knees. His name is Jesus, and he is all that I need. I have Jesus, and he is all that I need. Things are not perfect, and there's still to see. But I have Jesus, and he is all that I need. When your burdens are heavy and sinking low, your friends offer you and there is no place to go. Let me introduce you to a man that's free. His name is Jesus, all that you need. I have Jesus, and he is all that I need. He gave me a new life, and now things are not perfect, and there's still valleys that I need. Things are not perfect, and there's still valleys, you see. But I have Jesus, and he is all that I need.
For those of you that will be Sunday, several of us talked about maybe having some hot dogs, so we've got a list of stuff up here. If you can sign up to bring some condiments, just Moore and I put down that we'd pick up frankfurters or wieners or whatever you call them, and so we've got a list of things. If you can come back and put up here what you think you can bring, then that'll be good today. Okay. All right. Those of you that are visiting with us, we've been going through the book of Ecclesiastes on Wednesday. And as we look at the book of Ecclesiastes, there are some things that we want to understand about this book. We reiterate the fact that the Bible theme of the book of Ecclesiastes is life under the sun. Because the phrase under the sun is found 29 times in the book of Ecclesiastes. Therefore, there must be something the Lord wants us to know. I'm glad that I'm saved and I'm going to heaven. I'm thanking the Lord for that. I'm going to heaven by the blood of Jesus. I know that that's all settled, and I thank God for that. Ready to meet the Lord, and I hope you are too. But you know, I'm sort of like one fellow that said, I'm saved, I'm just not hankering to go at this moment. Okay? And so that's kind of the way I am, and maybe you're that way too. I do believe that the tragedies and turmoils of life, I can go to the next one to come. Believe that. But the emphasis that Solomon is making in Ecclesiastes is this, that how do I deal with life under the sun? Okay, that's very important. That's the central focus of this book. How do I deal with life under the sun? How do I deal with right now? The late evangelist Dr. B.R. Lakin said we get so concerned with the sweet by and by, we forget about the nasty now and now. And this is what the book of Ecclesiastes is talking about. How do I cope with the nasty now and now? Because you know what? It is nasty. There's no doubt about it. This world is not a friend to Christians. Never has been, never will be. Because the Bible tells us that this world is enmity against God. It is against God in all shapes, forms, and fashions. And we talk about the world. Three things the Bible talks about. The world, the flesh, and the devil. These are the things that we combat against as believers. Our own flesh, the world surrounding us, the world, the flesh, and the devil. Okay, and old Slewfoot himself. So we have these problems. We have these battles that we have to face. Now, another word that we talked about was important in this book is the book Vanity. And the word vanity just means emptiness, foolishness. Okay? And he's going to deal with that in chapter 4. I don't know how far we'll get. We'll see. But there are some areas in which we see the increase of vanity and foolishness. There are things, if you'll reflect for just a moment, are there not things that you observe in your daily life that you see on television, on the news, you hear about on the radio, you observe on your working conditions or your daily life, and some of the things, isn't it amazing how people are obsessed with foolishness? I mean, just foolishness. And don't take things serious. The things that they need to take seriously, they don't take seriously. I mean, we need to take some things seriously. We need to take the destination of our eternal soul. That's serious. That we're going to stand before God one day. That's serious. But, you know, have you noticed, for instance, how that on things like Twitter and Facebook, people talk about ridiculous things. I mean, I don't want to know what you had what kind of cereal you had for breakfast. I mean, do you know what I'm saying here? I mean, it's just ridiculous. Those things are silly. Are you that bored? Is somebody that bored that they got to talk about the fact whether they had regular Cap'n Crunch or peanut butter or what's the other one, the fruit kind, or whatever it is, you know? I mean, berries. I mean, is it that? I mean, are we that hard up, you know? Or something else that I know that's a concern to many of us is the fact that now we begin to see them put stuff on there that's like profanity. I don't want to read that profanity. I know you don't either. That's ridiculous. That's sad. Or to get on and to start griping about something or somebody. That's the dumb one. Because you get in and say, I don't like so-and-so. Well, my goodness. And are you trying to keep this a secret now that, you know, several thousand people have just seen this? So how many, you know, these things are food. The vanity and deal with reality. Now let's look at verse 1 of chapter 4. And it says, so I returned and considered all the oppression of this, because think of his position, number one, as a king. Number two, he's trying to do right, live right. And then on top of that, of course, he did have his problems. You go and study his life, and his life, his biography in the Bible is not very long. And that he did was he took wives unto himself that were not of the house of Israel. He took pagan wives. And in taking pagan wives, the pagan wives took his... That's foolish. So he's able to talk about all sides of the fence. So he says, so I return and consider all political leader. He was a world leader in his day. And he said, what? I have seen some things. I have seen some things. I have seen some oppressions. All that's done of the sun. And behold, the tears of such as were oppressed. Now, what does oppression bring about? Heartache, tears, and sorrow. Okay. And they had no comforter. How do you comfort somebody that does not know the Lord Jesus? You go to a funeral. You come and you speak to someone and you try to comfort them. But if the person in that coffin has never made a profession of faith, what do you say? If you come by and that person in that coffin is a born-again believer and has been serving the Lord and is faithful and all like that, man, be on sales, you see the joy of peace. Okay. He said, I look at the oppressions and I look at the brokenhearted and I look at all of these things, and he said, I see the tears of the oppressed and I see... On the side of the oppressors, there was history, for instance. Just study history. You see violent oppressors, nations who rise up against nations and destroy and pillage people. What do you do? What do you do when you have powerful forces in politics? What do you do when? You see what I'm saying? And he looks and he said, I look at the other side, I look at the oppressors, and I see that they have power, but he said, again, there's comfort. Verse 2, wherefore I praise the dead which are already dead more than the living which are alive. Now, this is going to be a depressing little note, but he said it, I didn't. He said, sometimes things get so bad, the people that have never been born are better off than the people that have been born here. Well, that's kind of depressing, isn't it? All right? You know what? You know where you'd have to go on that one? It's almost like you'd say this, even little babies that are aborted because of the cruelty of people, if they don't have to see this world, in some ways they're better off than people that have had to see the cruelties of this world. I mean, I'm not saying that abortion is right. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not. It's wrong. It's murder. But if there is anything that is even slightly positive, those dear blessed children, they died and went in the presence of Jesus Christ. They didn't have to go through the heartbreak and sorrows that children and young people have to go through in the day and time in which we are living. So it says, I praise the dead which are already dead more than the living that are yet alive. Yea, better is he than both they which hath not yet been, who hath not seen the evil that is done under the sun. So again, he talks about those that have passed on. Talks about those who have yet to be born, because he's talking about the grief and the sorrow and the heartache that people face in this day and time. Verse 4 again, I considered all travail. Now he already said I considered all oppression. Now he says I've considered travail. Travail is the constant pushing and pressure and heartache. The oppression can come from an outside source. Okay? Travail can come from inside. Travail is when you wake up in the morning and you are hurting in your heart. And where do you go and who do you talk? Because you can talk to people. You can talk to your loved ones. You can talk to your mate. You can talk to your pastor. You can talk to anybody. But you know, the whole truth of the matter is, when you begin to talk about things and you hear yourself talking about it, it's like, I cannot convey the hurt. I mean, I can't talk. I can't express it. Okay? And that's what he's talking about. He said, now, he talks about the oppression, but now he talks about travail. He said, again, I considered all travail and every right work, that for this a man is envied of his neighbor. This is also vanity and vexation of spirit. Let's stop right there in verse 4 and look at what he says in every right work. You know what'll stop oppression and travail? You know what will take care of travail? You know what will take care of the inward heart, the brokenness, the burden? Do you know what will help that? Is to make right decisions and to do right. Because notice what he said, notice the phrase. He said, and every right work. Now, you have somebody that's a chronic liar, and there are people who are chronic liars, and you probably know some of them and have met some of them in your life. A chronic liar must always remember every lie he's ever told in order to cover up the next one. Is he able to do that? Absolutely not. He can't do that. He does not have the ability. He does not have the brain power. But he doesn't realize that people who hear him tell those lies hear and say, wait a minute, he said this to me one day, now he's saying this to me on another day. Okay. People who are chronic, habitual liars. Okay. If you do right, if you do every right work, just like he said right there, you know what? You are in good shape. That's right. I mean, every day, old Dr. Bob Jones Sr., founder of Bob Jones University, said, do right, though the stars fall, do right. And if you do right, how come? Now, does that mean by doing right, everything will always be right? I wish that in every one of our lives as Christians, tack on that little fairy tale ending that says, and they lived happily ever after. But it doesn't. That died for their faith. I look at church history. That book that Brother Buddy and I have talked about. For their faith. And did everything right. Somebody says, well, is that right? You know, to do right and to have that. But the Lord's keeping the score. And great is their faith. We have learned, we have got a style of living, live happily ever after. That's we're wrong on that thing. Doing right. For instance, you look at, you watch a movie. You watch a 2-hour movie. There's a conflict, there's a problem, and at the end it's all settled. All the problems I had could be dealt with in 2 hours. But sometimes it takes a lifetime. But if I do right, no matter what, if I do right, guess what I can do? I can put my head down on my pillow at night and get a good night's rest. If I do right, somebody wrong, I got to live with that. You can't live with them. They become worse and worse as time goes on, because guess what? They considered all travail and every right work. That for this a man is envied of his neighbor, this nation of spirit. I can say, man, he got the money, doesn't he? You ever see some people drive off a brand new car? Beautiful, expensive, and there's a little twinge. Brother Julius says, I'm stuck with a mystery machine. You know what I'm saying? I know what I'm saying. And there's that little bit, and it's like, you know? And you wonder, who had to get in the way? Jobs are terrible right now, and the fact that chop and block and pull the blade and the guillotine and the whole ball of wax. People will do things for money, but all spirit, if you will. But he said, this is also what? Vanity and vexation of spirit. That beautiful car drives off the lot, 2000, the second the tires go off the pavement. One day, if he keeps it any length of time, it's going to have rust, vexation of spirit. He said, let us realize what true vanity and foolishness is. Verse 5, the fool foldeth his hands together and eateth his own flesh. The fool sits, the fool decides, okay, there isn't anything in the world but me. I am God's gift to the world. What am I going to do? Basically nothing. The fool is going to be lazy. The fool is not going to work. The fool is going to just fold his hands. Eats his own flesh, whatever he's got, what little he's got, he's going to take care of that. Verse 6, better is a handful with quietness than both the hands full with travail and vexation of spirit. It's better for a person that has a handful and quietness. In other words, you have peace. You have peace in your home. Some homes are nothing more than war zones. Just war zones. He said, better is it if you have a handful. You don't have a lot. You don't have wealth. You don't have riches. But you have got some peace and quiet. You can put your head on your pillow at night. All can be well at your house. That's a whole lot better, he said, than to have someone that is with both hands full of travail and vexation of spirit. And there are people that get up in the morning and they go out and they do whatever they do and trouble ensues and problems and difficulties and they lie and they cheat and do all of this. Then they come home, they have turmoil in their house because they can't get along with one another, and it's problems on top of problems on top of problems. He said, you might have all the wealth, all the riches, drive your sports car, live in a mansion, and people do that and they got it all, and yet their homes break up. Because there's no peace, there's no quiet, there's no peace here. If there's no peace here, there's no peace anywhere. What's the old principle? If mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. And it just ain't mama. It's daddy, it's the young'uns, it's grandma and grandpa. Because if there's no peace down here, you're going to have problems. And he said, this is vanity and vexation of spirit. Go out, I'm going to be like the Joneses. I'm going to move up to this beautiful, gated community. And I'm going to break my neck to have the fanciest, nicest, most expensive automobile. I'm going to put my children in the most expensive, nicest private schools. I'm going to go and I'm going to wear nothing but certain names of clothing. I'm even going to go to the grocery store and I'm not going to have generic brands. I'm going to have the best, and I'm going to kill myself if I have to do it. And guess what? Sometimes they do. Sometimes the stress is so great, it lays them out in an early coffin. He said, that's vanity. vexation of spirit. It's foolishness to do that. He said, you're better off to have just a little, just have some peace, have a handful, and be happy in Jesus. You'll be better off that way. Verse 7, the foolishness that we see all the time. What is he saying? Verse 8, there is one alone, and there is not a second. Yea, he hath neither child nor brother, yet is there no end of all his labor, neither in his eye satisfied with riches, neither saith he, for whom do I labor and bereave my soul of good? And this man is going to work from sun up to sun down. He has worked so hard, he has never married. He has worked so hard that therefore, and he's going to spend all his time. But now, interesting thing, because it says, he said, one alone, no second, no wife, no mate, no husband, whatever. He said, yea, neither child nor brother. I mean, either his brother, his family have died, or he just doesn't have any. They get at odds. They're against each other. My goodness, life is too short for that. In my thinking, and family is important. Now he says this, he said they don't have a family, there is no mate, because of the need that he thinks he has for an almighty dollar. Now here's the question, how much must he work? Is his eye satisfied with riches? Got a question for you, how much is enough? Don't know how much enough is? They always want a little more, don't they? Always. Well, let's see. If I could just in my life maybe settle down with a salary, somebody says of about $100,000, that'd be great, wouldn't it? Let's just say for argument's sake they got $100,000. And they say, are they going to say that's enough? Nope. Well, let me see if I can eke this thing out a little, get about $150,000 next year. Let's say they get that one done. Is that enough? Well, I said it was at one time, but you know the way inflation is and price of living going up. So let's see if next year I can go up to $200,000. And how much is enough? There's never enough because the Bible says the eye is not satisfied. Because people look and see and they say, I'm going to keep up with the Joneses. And they, with these eyes, they watch and they pay attention. They say, I've got to have this and I've got to have that. Boy, isn't that good? And you know, and I tell you who I blame a lot for this is television. Because television shows all these advertisements, all these commercials, and they're always saying, come get it, come get it, come get it. And we say, I'm coming, I'm coming, I'm coming. And now we are in a society of people in which we have so much indebtedness. Most people, if you think about it, have so much indebtedness with credit cards, they'll die and never get it paid off. Somebody said, let's see, how was it put? That we're a bunch of people that spend money we do not have for things we do not like or do not want for people we do not like. You ever thought about that? We are people who spend money we have for things we do not need and give it to people we do not like. For whom do I labor? Notice that question. Who am I working for? Now, when you die, mister, where's your money going? Can you spend your money? It was said of Ebenezer Scrooge, he couldn't begin to spend all the money that he had. What do you do with all that money? If you worked and 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 you worked, what you going to do with all that money? Who are you going to leave it to if there's nobody in the family? If you work so hard that you don't have a wife, you don't have any children, who's going to get the money? Somebody will. And after it's all said and done and you killed yourself to get the money, what have you accomplished? You have wasted your life. I can take you to a man right now that did that, something like that. He spent his life, he worked two jobs. He went to his first job, went to his second job and worked. Work got in like something like 7 o'clock in the morning, went to work, didn't come in until about 8 or 9 o'clock at night. That was it. But it's not because it was a question of even in poverty, it was because he was climbing the social ladder. Let me tell you what he missed. He missed his son playing baseball. He missed his only child growing up. My question, and most people, if you ask them the question, they wouldn't answer it honestly. But if I said, was it worth it? Some people would give the excuse and blah, blah, blah. But if people be honest. See, if something happens and you have children or grandchildren or nieces or nephews and you've got a choice between going to watch them play ball and cleaning your house, got news for you. Your house will always be there. But them playing ball games will not always be so, will it? Bethany and Chelsea used to play together. Now they're in college and getting ready to graduate. But they used to play basketball together and all of those types of things. And you know what? Hey, what's the better? My house is still there. Same house I lived in when she was in school. And guess what? It needs to be cleaned just now ago or something. What's the difference? You've got to put the priorities where they have to be. And the priorities always ought to be on human beings. Always. This is also vanity. Yea, it is a sore travail. Verse 9, two are better. When a man and a woman get married, I was counseling with a young couple. I said, make sure that you can say this about marry. Make sure that that prospective mate will be your very best friend. Take the star football player and the star cheerleader get married, and their drawing is completely physical. But have you ever seen some of those folks years later? Their chest dropped down into their drawers. It used to be this great physique, and now it's like, you know, there's a lot right there. There is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. Not a physical relationship totally. Physical doesn't hurt. Hold in the line. You might look at your mate and say, you are ugly. And I did not marry an ugly man or an ugly woman, so therefore... Is that not a reality? Is that not a harsh reality? It is. It is. Two better than one, because they have a good reward for their labor. And when the day comes when you can say the joy of being able to say, I have my husband or my wife and I, we have worked together, we have laid together, we are friends together, we have been through thick and thin together, and then be able to take it straight. What a blessing. Verse 10 says, but for if they fall, the one will lift up his fist alone when he falleth, for he hath not another to help him up. What do you do? You know, I thought about it, people who are lonely. What do they do in those twilight years? I'm going to say this again because it always has gripped me, always. There are certain classifications of people that break my heart. Whenever we go to the nursing home or the assisted living home to see Sister Parsons, there are people there that break your heart. They break your heart. There's a lady, those of you that maybe haven't been to see her, they've changed her and put her in a different room. And there's this lady right beside her. That lady doesn't know what's going on. She does not know where she is. You talk to her, and she'll look at you, and she'll just go, hey, that's it. I asked Sister Parsons, I said, does she have much company? She says, very little. I've heard some of those folks, they'll say things like, oh, they'll say, you know, said, my children are coming to see me today. How do you forget your parents? How? People who are mentally challenged. And I see people who are mentally challenged and they have parents that take care of them. And you know what's going to happen when those parents die? They're going to go into a home. And they're going to be forgotten. And my heart goes out to those type of people because It's if you've got somebody that you love, they're going to get you through. But if you have somebody that does that, if you're by yourself, can you imagine somebody that has all the money in the world and they're stuck in the nicest, most expensive, most elaborate assisted living home that there possibly is, but they're by themselves? See what he's talking about? He's talking about foolishness. He's talking about emptiness. He's talking about the fact that, you know, we get our eyes, we get our perception on certain things, and we forget some things that we need to remember. Verse 11 again, if two lie together, then they have heat, but how can one be warm alone? 12, and if one prevail against him, two shall withstand him, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken. And if so, you know, sometimes two brothers or two sisters will have it out, boy. But you know what? They've got the right to do it because they're brothers and sisters. But let somebody else try. That's what he's saying. Verse 13, better is a poor and a wise child than an old and foolish king who will no more be admonished. The king's got everything he wants, but he's foolish because he is trusting in his wealth and riches. And he says it's better to be poor and wise than rich, arrogant, proud, and think that's going to get you what you have to have. For out of prison he comes to ruin, whereas also he in his kingdom becometh poor. I considered all the living which walk under the sun with a second child that shall stand up in his stead. There is no end of all the people, even of all that have been before them. They also that come after shall not. Remember, Ecclesiastes is written in the twilight years of Solomon's life. And Solomon says, you know what, I've lived. But he said, now, he says, I've got to come to grips with some realities. And the reality is I need to look back, see what I did rightly, and then see, because he talks about the children that are coming up behind me to help me to see. I want them to understand that they need to get their focus right. They need to realize what is vanity, vexation of spirit, emptiness. And if they will, he said, that will leave them oppression in verse 1. Travail in verse 2, oppression is the outside of that, then guess what? The rest of their life can be beautiful. Does that mean? But if you do right, understand what doing right's all about, then you can take the rest of your life. If I were to ask you a question, or maybe I should change it, if you had anything to change in your life, what would you change? And I think the answer to that is depending on how you have made the decisions in your life. But if you said something to the effect, I wish I could live my entire life over again, then that says somebody has made a series of